You got the touch. You got the power.
I don't know about Starscream.
Well, I think he proved himself as a leader time and time again. Like, if Megatron would fall over some branches, he would go, look, Megatron has fallen. I'm the leader now. He can't cut it, like I told you.
Do you really believe that?
Yeah, I do. You know, in reanalyzing the movie, though, you almost had to kill Optimus Prime. Because think if you have the movie without the death of Optimus Prime, you really have nothing, you know?
Yeah. Well, the death of Optimus Prime is the impetus for the hero's journey of self-discovery. Can I be a leader? Do I want to be a leader?
They just picked a poor baby face. So they're like, we're going to have two baby faces. We'll have like the older, wiser baby face Ultra Magnus with the young, trying to become a leader of baby face, you know, what's his name? Hot Rod.
Hot Rod.
And then it didn't work.
Mm. You know, I think part of the problem is that Ultra Magnus is the reluctant leader, because he says he's not a leader. I'm not a leader, Prime. I'm a soldier.
Right, but you can't just have two fucking baby faces half-assed and become one. I don't think they knew how strong they had a baby face leader in Prime. I think they kind of knew, but like, wow, our toys are really popular. It's like, well, he's popular. Megatron's popular. Starscream and Soundwave are popular. You know, Bumblebee's just sort of popular.
Well, that's because Bumblebee, they made Bumblebee look, you know, they brought him out as a jobber, ended up coming out like a really nice, a nice guy. You see, he didn't have the full treatment of having the Takara mold of a Sunstreaker, you know? He came out looking, you see, there goes my webcam again. It's out.
Sunstreaker got eaten by my dog. I don't know if everybody remembers that.
Oh, this is good. Oh, I like that camera. You like that camera angle?
Yeah.
The best. So anyway,
What about Wheeljack? Okay, good.
What about Wheeljack? Hey, welcome to Pro Wrestling Cast, your weekly dose of Transformers, hairstyles, and heavy metal. We commentate on the weekly news of the pro wrestling world every single week. Oh, there you go. Okay, I'm going to fix my webcam now.
What's the best Blue Murder album? Starscream or Chris Hero? I just... threw everything in one thing.
Everything. Oh, yeah. Okay. So anyway, hey, don't forget, before we log in to all of the This Week in Wrestling news, because it was a very, very huge week. I mean, it's very seldom do we have so little to talk about on the show.
So little.
Now that both the Blues Brothers are back together, the band is back together.
Always.
Let's talk about this. You can support our show by liking, subscribing to our iTunes feed there. You can also check out this channel on YouTube, and you can like and subscribe to that. Leave us those 5-star reviews. All the different links you need to know are there at ProWrestlingCast.com, and there we've got links to Amazon, so you can help us out. So before you shop Amazon, click our link. We have links to our Patreon, so you can support our show that way if you so choose, and so much more. So just please check out ProWrestlingCast.com, support our show, and we would appreciate it greatly. And now on with the show.
You're listening to a Weeby Geeks Network podcast.
It's Pro Wrestling Cast.
I can't help that I'm the greatest wrestler alive today.
With your hosts, Al John and Steven.
Drink it in, man.
Pro Wrestling Cast, for a weekly look into the world of professional wrestling.
The love that was given me, and this time I will repay you now, because I will be the next world's heavyweight champion of this hard time blues.
Follow us on Facebook at Pro Wrestling Cast and on Twitter at P Wrestling Cast.
And I am truly the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be.
Have a question or just want to comment? Leave us a voicemail at 615-9339-PWC. That's 615-9339-792.
Austin 316 says I just whipped your ass.
Pro Wrestling Cast.
Now can you dig that, sucker?
Yeah. So anyway, about Starscream.
No, I think he would have been a better leader. I mean, I get it. You need a new toy line, but season 3 is pretty strong in a lot of ways. It just, if you don't have a strong baby face, you don't have a strong show. You can do it with just a strong heel, and even the heels were kind of I get it. The Quintessons were excellent heels. They're very dark characters, but you know, you can't keep killing Optimus Prime, bringing him back as a zombie, kill him again. By the third time they brought him back, it's like, hey, I'm fucking gonna go watch bowling instead, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened.
Yeah, dead is never really dead, unfortunately, but...
Sometimes!
Well, the thing is that, you know, the territory was being starved of really good baby faces. They weren't built up as strong as Optimus Prime, and then you realize, we really need to bring him back, Hogan. I mean, Optimus Prime.
Well, that was the problem with Hulk Hogan. It was revealed that he wasn't like Optimus Prime, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly what killed Hogan. So would you say that Hot Rod or Rodimus Prime is more like the Ultimate Warrior of the Transformers universe?
I was talking about that with Sean Roddy. I think Ultimate Warrior was stronger than people give him credit. Okay, you had Ted DiBiase, who was damaged goods because he had already feuded. Andre had already had his run with Warrior. You had Rick Rude. That's all you had was Rude. Rude wasn't strong enough of a catalyst for a situation, okay, because he had already had the feud with Warrior. You had absolutely no one for Warrior to feud with. It was not Warrior's fault. Warrior was perfect in the position he was in. He would have been a bigger draw, not as champion. You know, that it's just one of those situations. It was great that he won the title, but he should have just immediately lost it.
Lack of long-range planning.
Right. It was the Hogan factor. Hogan was a real, you know, huge deal that happened once every 20, 30-year kind of thing, and Warrior did an admirable job, I thought, dealing with the situation. You know, people say, well, his promos were too, I don't even know how to explain it.
Cosmic?
Wacky?
Universal? Universal, perhaps?
Right. But, you know, if you're a deep guy, like, I understand what he's talking about all the time. You know, but I really do. But it's, you know, even the distrusity, I kind of get it, you know. But I'm a weird guy. I'm pretty extreme, some have said. And I like to inject steroids for hours straight.
Just so you know, my Monster screen cleaner just went heel on me because it got dumped into my coffee because of my rewiring with my new webcam. So
I didn't just drink it.
I can't drink it now because it there's like chemicals and stuff in it now.
Why don't you just load up the rocket ship with the screen cleaner and it'll take you as far as you want to go?
Jeez, man, this has been an excellent show thus far. Welcome to Pro Wrestling Cast, your weekly dose of wrestling news and commentary. I am Aljon Go with the
Ultimate Warrior. Look, Ultimate Warrior, stronger draw than Hot Rod, not as strong as Starscream. It's actually simple.
And I hope you enjoyed our breakdown of Transformers the movie. I'm joined by our not unlikely hero. We're joined by, and not Chris Hero, but we are joined by Stephen Anthony, the pro wrestling historian and heel commentator. How are you this week?
I mean, I'm really, you know, I'm really, really fat right now, and it's depressing. But Chris Hero's fat, so it's okay.
So,
and Chris Hero did beat Cody Rhodes.
There you go. We have a lot of stuff to talk about this week in wrestling news. We also have a mystery promo of the week. You know, last or I guess the midweek show, I ended up airing some of that pre-NXT TakeOver 2 Brooklyn press conference with Triple H, as well as the Miz work shoot promo that was airing on Talking Smack, which really set the world on fire. Let's go ahead and get into this week in wrestling news.
This week in wrestling news.
So, Steven, the aftermath of NXT TakeOver 2 Brooklyn, quite possibly the greatest show WWE had produced after, well, even WrestleMania, actually.
I thought it was better than that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then you also have SummerSlam, a.k.a. SummerSlam. Slam. Now, I can't even say it right. SummerSlam, as Vince McMahon would say. And then we have Raw, SmackDown, and this shooty promo, the most newsworthy of it all.
Weird. Yeah, I know, right?
Is Talking Smack. I mean, everybody's talking about this work shoot. You know, I'll play a little segment of it, but
There's no gentle way to say it. To me, you wrestle like a coward. You wrestle like somebody who's afraid to get hit.
Like, I wrestle like a coward.
You wrestle like a coward. I'm the one.
If I
were to create a wrestler who, to me, like embodies, like when I was an independent guy and I was thinking like, oh, okay, what's the soft WWE style? It would be that. WWE has transformed in the last.
Hold on. You had your chance to talk. You're the one that called me a coward in the wrestling ring. I'm the coward in the wrestling ring.
Yeah.
But let's talk about cowards for 1 second. Okay. The reason I wrestle the way I wrestle is because I can do it day in and day out all the time for 10 plus years. I have never in my career ever have been injured. I don't get injured for 6 months to a year. I am here each and every week. But you sit there and call me a coward?
Yeah.
I'm the coward. Wait, let me tell you about a coward. Let me tell you about a guy who tells his WWE fans, the people that he loves, that he will be back. He promises them. I promise you, I will be back in 1 year's time to claim this title. But you didn't, Daniel, did you? But I'm the coward.
Okay,
I'm the one that doesn't love the fans.
If they would let me come back, I would come back.
Oh, if you would?
Yeah.
You would. You love that WWE ring. You love being wrestling. You love being right in that wrestling ring. And you love wrestling, right? Well,
yeah.
Why don't you quit? Why don't you quit and go to the bingo halls with your indie
okay,
friends?
Okay, I think you
then,
need to
huh?
calm.
No,
that's not,
no,
what, this,
I got
that's not
this.
What this show's
Me
about.
And the GM have this. Thank you very much, Renee. This is a great show, but we're talking here. I need to talk to you real quick because the fact is you're the one that calls me the coward, but you're the one that doesn't get in the WWE ring again. No, don't you walk away from me, Daniel. Don't you walk away. I'm the one that loves the fans. I'm the one that loves everyone and everything. You're the one that gets up and walks away every single time. You're the coward. I am not a coward. I am your Intercontinental Champion, and there's a reason I am the title. Reason making this the most relevant, prestigious title that WWE has, and I deserve
okay,
the respect
okay.
on SmackDown Live. Get that camera right here. Get that camera right here. Understand that this is day 141 of the never-ending Intercontinental Championship World Tour, and I swear to you, I promise you, it will be the most relevant title on SmackDown Live. I could care less about those little kids on for the tag team titles and the Women's Championship and the WWE Championship. This is my show. My show. And I'm sick of all of you, my GM, sitting there criticizing me, calling me the coward. You're the cowards. I'm the one here day in and day out in that wrestling ring beating people up. Thank you very much.
And give me your take on The Miz versus Daniel Bryan on Talking Smack.
It's a promo. Sometimes you can cut a promo really good and people believe it's real. Because wrestling's fake, but sometimes you can do something that people think is real, and then they get more interested in the show. This is actually what wrestling is.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. It was a good promo by The Miz. And, for people that don't know about method acting like I do, a method actor becomes the character. Is this right? You become a character more than the actual character itself could be if they were real. And I think they were just really deep into the moment. I think you extemporaneously begin to bring in factors of your real thoughts and real life, and then it becomes transcendent and real, like Dusty and Ric Flair and Tully Blanchard were able to do on my favorite show, the NWA show, okay? And here you go. They pulled it off. It was excellent. It's not a shoot. if it were a shoot, it's just not a shoot, and there are elements of shoot in it, but that's what a good promo actually always was. We're very scripted these days with the dumb writers, these guys from LA, and they're writing all this crap, and they have good ideas, but there's nothing better than the extemporaneous creation of something just in the moment. The Four Horsemen was created extemporaneously by Arn Anderson, just talking, that's when it's the good stuff. But now what do you do? Now what you gonna do? You gonna do The Miz versus Daniel Bryan? The Miz is gonna be forced to do a strong style match versus Chris Hero? Where do you go,
Right. So let's analyze this. You have you're supposed to have a bunch of subscribers come in for TakeOver and SummerSlam weekend. They buy the network. The kids,
allegedly,
the kids beg their parents and whatever. But you have this Talking Smack show, which is new. They're investing money and time into it. And to be quite honest, I didn't watch Talking Smack because I don't have time in my life for this much wrestling. Okay. And then this promo happens. And then all of a sudden, I think that this is the best show ever because it actually is good because there are unscripted moments with the WWE talent that know their character, that are doing their thing, and they're showing a lot more personality in these post-show programs than they are able to do on the actual show. And I don't understand why they can't just let him do that.
Well, they did let him do that. I mean, Cesaro did this too. Well,
right on the post-show draft, right? Or the whatever that was.
I think it was a post-draft show on the network.
When he quote unquote shot whatever you want to call it. I mean, wow, that was also newsworthy as well. You know, yeah,
he shoots his load every week when he does all 72 of his moves in the same match over and over again. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's why he'll never get over as a main eventer.
Wow, it's funny because didn't the Attitude Era guys only have 5 moves too? They had a very small move set. They got over.
The only difference is this. Steve Austin versus The Undertaker, a title match in 1999, not even 98, drew 10.2 million viewers for their one match. And then last week, we did about 3 million. That's 7 million people that have left. But no, push Cesaro. Go for it. I don't know. I think the Attitude Era guys, those matches were really bad, though. I don't know if we remember. On pay-per-view, sometimes they'd go off and have a good one. Triple H against Mankind, or Cactus Jack was great. Mankind against Taker. Steve Austin had some good ones with Kurt Angle. There were good matches back then, but for the most part, they were just selling the product with the TV show. Mm-hmm. And now they're selling these matches, and that's why you see these injuries every week. We'll talk about Finn Balor, I'm sure. Or should I say Seth Rollins? But to get back to the point of the shootiness of the show, it is a good idea. Lesnar and Orton did something. Cesaro after the draft. And now Miz Bryan was actually pretty good. I know a lot of people on the Facebook page we talk on thought it was a shoot. And then other people were like, it's not a shoot. You know, the point is that people are talking. It doesn't matter. You know, the point is that people are talking. That's the whole point.
And not just talking, but tuning in to see the segment. So... Mm-hmm. They want to try to retain viewers. They want to appease hardcore fans. They have a lot of different people they need to really get behind the network. And this is a way to energize internet marks, you know, and get them talking because that's all people were talking about. And then people are like, you know, even real journalists and other people from outside the wrestling industry, like Forbes and Fox, and everybody's picking up on these wrestling news. And people realize and look. Even though we have maybe 3.2 million people watching the WWE product from week to week or from day to day, Monday, Tuesday, what have you, okay, they are generating some legit coverage that other people are watching and reading that may have been lapsed wrestling fans, you know? So they're generating buzz. People are watching the network. They're trying to hope to boost subscriptions, trying to recapture some of that magic that was, in my opinion, the Attitude Era Raw, which was anything can happen. If you can predict things that happen, if you can do this, that, and the other, then why do you even watch? You might as well just read the results on the dirt sheets. But then you have all this stuff happen and you're like, wow, this is really cool. And yes, there are sparks of that shootiness. There are elements of realism in there. And how much have we said on this show that WWE doesn't know how to do reality, right? It's all uber scripted. But then you have these shows where the Usos can come out and they can talk and they can show more personality. Same with the rest of the WWE. And then of course, then you have this, which I think was just a brilliant thing. You know, you give these people, they know their characters, they know what they're supposed to do. The verbiage may not have been all that that good, but hey, look, the beauty of it is in its rough form, right?
Right, but it was brilliant as a promo, but where it's not brilliant as a long-term idea, you know?
Yeah, because where does it lead?
You know, you're going to let Brian wrestle again? You can't. You have all these people suing for concussions.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
So what's the point?
Well, it goes back to, okay, so it goes back to Daniel Bryan's book. So Daniel Bryan in his
Lady book, Balls, right.
Lady Balls. in the new book, which, by the way, the Steve Austin podcast, we need to talk about that because that was really good.
Yeah.
Pat Patterson. But anyway, so.
Boy, is he in for a surprise.
Yeah.
It's my favorite Attitude Era moment.
Nice. I like that. We're talking about the Daniel Bryan book.
Right.
He basically says that he would lie to doctors, you know, about his condition, or not doctors, but promoters, about his condition because of the concussions. He wanted to continually work. And what did he say on that promo? He said that, you know, I'd still be wrestling today if they would let me.
That is so true. He can get out of his contract, you know, by being on TV. He can go to New Japan and fight Shibata and then die in the ring of a concussion, if that's what he wants to do. Mm. Because that might happen. That's what's so weird about the situation, you know. Is it his decision? Is it theirs? When he's under contract, it's theirs. And then they tie him in so tight that he can't leave for years. You know, and that's probably why he's a commissioner. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the best three wrestlers in the world the last 15 years. Mm-hmm. But Misawa died in the ring. There's so much about it that's really interesting that makes it a great shoot for me, too. A work.
Yeah, right?
Shooty work.
A work shoot.
I just went back on everything I fucking said for 10
minutes. Just like CM Punk, you know, so... Yeah, that I think that is interesting. But, you know, here's the thing that we were talking about earlier before we started rolling is the fact that he might say that, but I don't believe he'll ever go back unless he decides to divorce Brie Bella. Because if that's the case, because Brie doesn't want him to wrestle, I don't think his friends and family want him to wrestle anymore, because it is, you know, an injury like Edge and like so many others that are life-threatening injuries, that if he had the urge, the wherewithal to say, hey, look, like The Miz said, if you love these fans so much, then why don't you quit and continue to wrestle? That's what people forget, that whole, why don't you quit and continue to wrestle? And
that was a cheap shot, because he can't quit. He cannot quit and go wrestle. Mm-hmm. Because in the contract,
well, that's not, I don't. Well, once again, you know, I have to think that, you know, for years and years since Daniel Bryan came on to our TV, WWE TV, in NXT, that the chemistry between Bryan and Miz is really good. I mean, the two of them are really good together. And that was
Bryan's first great feud. I don't think anybody remembered that when this happened. That was his first really good feud. And Miz put him over and got him over with the crowd, this crowd.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Take a look at some of that stuff. Take a look at Daniel Bryan's, you know, singles run. Take a look at Daniel Bryan and Miz. Take a look at Miz's single run, actually, as his run as champion when Rock Cena happened with Miz as a surrogate for Rock. I mean, people make fun of Miz, but I've actually followed Miz throughout his career, because some people don't know this, and Steven, now you know.
Okay.
Is that I actually auditioned for The Real World. I don't know if you knew that or not.
Okay. Why don't you tell that story real quick? Because that's more interesting than this.
I auditioned for The Real World back, I think, in Real World Seattle. This was back when Real World actually had single digits.
Right.
And so MTV wanted to use me in another show called Fanatic at that point.
I declined of course
to do that, because I didn't want to do that, but I wanted to be on Real World. So having said that, I watched Real World. I had to continue to watch Real World, and Miz was on that show, and I said, oh well, this guy's really into wrestling like I am, that's cool, so I'll follow him. So when he left the show and he went to wrestling school, I actually was DJing in Nashville and would follow his career, because he was wrestling in Kentucky. He wrestled in a lot of the Midwest. really? Learning his craft as independents. And a lot of people don't realize, well, Miz, he was a reality show guy and then went into WWE and then all of a sudden was Morrison and all this. And I'm like, no, he actually has indie cred. Wow. People don't realize that he worked indie shots a lot.
Not just indie cred, Kentucky indie cred.
Well, he was in OVW, but even before then, he was actually in. I mean, he did all the stuff that all the Southern wrestling guys did, you know.
Right.
So, but people don't know that about the Miz. So I have a lot of respect for Miz, and I feel that he literally is the heel of the WWE.
Well, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, if you look at who actually appreciates being a heel, other than, you know, Brock Lesnar, but people cheer Brock, you know, with Paul Heyman. Miz is a true heel. He doesn't give a damn. He loves being a heel, and he plays it up. And I'm trying to think of other, like, bona fide, really heely heels that just don't give a damn. And that's really Miz.
Jericho's pretty good.
Oh, well, Jericho too, but, you know.
No, you're right. Okay. Yeah. Well, I turned down MTV Real World too. I didn't want to do it either. That's something I don't think the audience knows about me.
No, they I auditioned. I didn't make it. They wanted me for another show. That's what I'm trying to tell you. I didn't turn.
I know you had. I listened to the story. What year was that?
I don't even remember. It was in the 90s. Yeah, that's an interesting story. I think
that was the same year I was homeless, probably. So you see, our lives have been different as we got to this point on the show together. And that's a shoot.
Now you know a lot. Yeah, we are shooting. Now people are like, Al John, you auditioned for The Real World? Yeah, I did. And I heard back from MTV. But
well, I wish you would have been on that, because then we could say Al John from The Real World and Steven, who is homeless.
But anyway, I just, once again, I think it's interesting. But this leads me to my next thing. We're talking about Finn Balor.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, the strong style of work that eventually led to Daniel Bryan being decommissioned, if you will, and then recommissioned as commissioner. You see what I did there?
Recommissioned as commissioner.
Recommissioned as commissioner. But, you know, the WWE style versus the more modern style. We just heard, I just alluded to the Pat Patterson interview with Stone Cold Steve Austin this week on Unleashed about how the work style is different. And I have made all kinds of, I've listened to so many people in regards to that, you know, HD cameras, work style, people and trends and what people like and what people dig, you know. But Finn Balor going into surgery, and his, I guess his surgery or his condition was a lot worse than people expected, but, he still seems to, you know, seems to be on track for a complete, heal up for, you know, the next 6 months. So, is today's wrestling style, is it too dangerous? Are people like Seth Rollins too dangerous because, of what's going on? Is he an example of what needs to change in the wrestling industry today?
Well, I've never been to jail, but if I'd gone to jail three separate times and I said, well, this time this happened, and then this, I had a DUI, but you don't understand, I had to drive someone else home. And then I got arrested for spousal abuse, but she started the fight. You would say, well, geez, Steve's always gone to jail, right? Mm-hmm. Even though I had a good, strong excuse, I felt like that's what Seth Rollins. Like, well, you know, he broke Cena's nose, but it was a little slip up. Like, well, you know, he threw him into the turnbuckle bump, but he took the bump wrong. Well, you know, Sting's 53. Well, you know, every time Seth Rollins is in a match, someone's career ends or they're off for 6 to 9 months. That's what I know. You know, and he threw his ass stupid. Okay. He can't see behind him if he's going into a guardrail. He threw him short. He's not as strong as he used to be or something. I don't know what he was doing. You have to get up. If you're going to take that bump, I think you got to be like high up to hit the small of your back so you can go back around and kind of grab it, right? I'm just assuming. But if you hit the bump right on that, all the weight's on that, that was clumsy and dumb again. And now the curmudgeonly, old, decrepit Bret Hart is right. Bret Hart was right all along. Well, go back to what he did. He did the go to sleep for real, and his nose exploded. Cena's nose exploded into pieces. That's what happened.
So, yeah, Bret Hart made some interesting comments this week in regards to Seth Rollins being unsafe to work with. And so other wrestlers came out in that regard. And I understand Sting doesn't blame Seth Rollins for his injury. John Cena doesn't blame Seth Rollins for his injury, nor does Finn Balor. So, you know, and a lot of boys are saying, well, you know, the buckle bomb's been around. It's going to continue to be around, you know. And if Vince McMahon thought for one moment that Seth Rollins was a dangerous performer, that he would have him pulled immediately. However, and I share the same attitude. I did until I started hearing and reading more things. I was much like you. I thought, you know, I actually said on a, I think it was like the, not Pro Wrestling Cast, but Pro Wrestling Chat Board, a different chat board, that when are people going to realize that Seth Rollins is dangerous? And then after I did a lot more reading and things, I almost wanted to remove that comment, because if the boys don't harbor any ill will toward it, and it looked like maybe Finn Balor should have actually just tucked his head and not turned around to see and trust Rollins, that maybe he wouldn't have gotten injured as a result. So, I mean, I can see.
No, I got to disagree on that. I'm sorry. Well, no, he can't see. He can't see. He's flying in the air. He's a little guy.
Right. Well, what I'm saying is that I can see both sides of the. I can see both sides of the argument. One made by some of the vocal boys that are, you know, I guess I don't know if they're protecting the business or protecting Seth. I don't know what their motivation would be other than to say that, no, he's completely safe. But that does bring up that interesting style. You have a guy and to circle it back around the Miz, Daniel Bryan, you know,
Daniel Bryan never hurt people like that, though. He's right. Sloppy on these moves. Sting is old and retired. He's not going to say anything negative about Rollins, because if you say something negative about their main eventer, you're negative on the company. And he knows politically he can't do it. Same thing with Cena, who's barely ever there. And who was the other person he hurt? Oh, Balor. Well, he's going to get pushed when he comes back, so he can't. I think the guy's dangerous. I think he's sloppy. He's Ring of Honor sloppy. And that works in Ring of Honor. I don't know. I think he's sloppy. This is the first time I thought that about him. So I had the opposite version of what you said.
Well, the thing is, though, I agreed with you at first, but then I almost, like I said, I almost had to rethink it because of what the other boys are saying. And I do understand your point. The point is that those guys have to go back to work. So they're not going to be critical of the company nor the person that is getting the rocket push, because that could affect their spot. So I get that.
Well, what's good about Rollins? Let's really analyze that too. What's good about him? What's good is that everyone keeps getting injured and he goes back into the main event. Reigns fails the piss test. Balor shoulder flies out of the socket. They split the brand in half, and now he's back in the main event picture. You know, I'm just saying. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying.
Right, right. Well,
why do you think he feuded with Kane? Because you can't hurt Kane. He's too fucking lumbering and big, and he ain't doing the turnbuckle. He ain't doing shit. So he does a move to Kane and hurts his own knee. Every feud he's been in for a year is everyone's got hurt.
Yeah, right. I'd be curious to hear what our audience has to say in regards to Seth Rollins. Dangerous or not dangerous? A menace or not a menace? A sniveling heel or baby face? I don't know.
An old witch by a cauldron is what he is. I've injured Sting.
Treble, toil, and treble.
Right. He's an old witch.
He's an old witch. How about these other things? We'll talk about.
He sounds exactly like Starscream.
He is Starscream. So who would be Megatron then? So
Vince McMahon.
Vince McMahon. That's right. Now he'd probably be more like Unicron, if that's the case.
Jobber.
Jobber. So having said that, if you're playing along at home, having said that, so we have that'll be the new T-shirt for Pro Wrestling Cast. Having said
Unicron's a jobber.
Unicron. Yeah, Unicron did the big job. You know,
that's like he's like the Big Show. I mean, like you push him as he fucking jobs the first thing.
Yeah. You build him up for a month as the biggest thing, and then, of course, he ends up doing the job.
Why didn't they sell a Unicron figure, though? That doesn't make sense.
I think they did sell a Unicron.
You need to find that.
Yeah, I think they did
sell Unicron. You need to find that for me, and I will buy it.
Yeah, I think they did sell a Unicron. So here we are. More Transformers news.
Rob Jenkins, let me know on the Unicron. He'll shoot you a link right to buy it.
It'll hopefully be our Amazon link. So here we have. So here we have. Let's go over your highlights really quick for NXT TakeOver.
Okay.
So NXT TakeOver for me, we were pretty spot on with just about everything except a few of the main events. I suspected that we were going to have a glorious Bobby Roode, which was awesome. Austin Aries went over, which was great. Ember Moon had a great debut. We had a great tag team division match. I thought that was probably one of the best matches I have ever seen. Once again, it seems like those guys just have really incredible, you know, chemistry. What did you think of that?
I've been talking about Johnny Wrestling for years. He's a wonderful wrestler. And, you know, Dash and Dawson, I think, hold on. I need to pray for Christ to give me the peace to not get so upset and wound up when I talk about what I'm going to say with the pay-per-view. Because people are rating these matches now, right?
All right. So
even Aljon Go, who doesn't rate matches,
predicted
a rating. Which is funnier than rating a match.
It is funny, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I predicted, I knew that too. I was like, oh, 4.25, they'll do Balor and Nakamura. And I guess that was about, wouldn't you say that was about 4.25?
Yeah. Look. I'm going to stop rating matches from here on out because now I have a complex.
What would you rate that match? What would you rate the tag match? What deals will let him about to yell about? So go ahead. I won't yell at you though, so don't worry.
Okay, so in the sum of build up story, all that good stuff. I mean, I think it was a decent 4-star match.
4 stars, not 4.5.
No,
I think if some of these marks would have seen, I don't know, like if you see Okada versus Ishii, you'll go like, whoa, if that's 5 or 4.75 stars, then how could I rate this fucking tag match 4.75 stars? I'm just saying. But that turned into a trend to, I think, like overrate the tag match, because I thought American Alpha against the Revival was a stronger.
It was stronger.
Tag match, right? Okay.
Yeah. Now, in my opinion.
So for most people, because they're uneducated, a lot of them, Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Wrestling have been doing these matches for years.
Yeah.
Okay, so when a smart, an internet smart, wants to sound, they go 4.5, 4.5. See what I'm saying? But they don't know the abilities of Ciampa, not just in NXT or CWC and or Johnny Wrestling. Okay, so I think that's what they just want to express themselves. They're so excited and jubilant. But to me,
like Daniel Bryan in the CWC.
Well, yeah, because that's what he's into, you know? And he wanted to be in the CWC, but he's going to have to fight Kota Ibushi in the CWC, and Dr. Maroon will have, like, he might be ringside, you know? By the way, they had a DDT show last night. Kota Ibushi coming back to DDT. I told all you fucking people, there's something wrong with him. They offer him a contract. He's going to be on Monday Night Raw fighting Seth Rollins. And he goes to DDT.
So strange.
They draw like an average of 313 people. He's wild and free. He does what he wants. Sorry. Side note. Okay. What was I talking about?
The ratings.
Asuka against Bayley was the best match on the card. And everybody said, well, that's about a 4-star. That's about a 4-star match. I'm going to say something. They're deliberately underrating the women's matches. I'm telling you, they are.
I thought it was a brilliant match.
I thought that was a 4.5-star match. I thought the Joe Nakamura match was 4.25, and I thought the tag match was 4. The psychology, I think, with like some of the reversals Bayley and Asuka were doing were brilliant. And I was just sitting there like, this is brilliant. This is brilliant. And then the ending was brilliant. They didn't, I mean, everything, there was, I think, one maybe botch. Okay, but whatever. But the storytelling of the match, the psychology and everything.
Sound.
they underrate these women matches sometimes. You know, it's like, well, I'd like to give it 5 stars, but it's just that if they would watch All Japan Women's Pro Wrestling, okay, and they would see Aja Kong and some of the things that I've seen her do, right. You know, they wouldn't talk about strong style in NXT because there is none.
There is none.
Strong style is when you elbow someone in the head like Brock Lesnar and bust them open, but that's just at the beginning.
Yeah, that's just like the opening bell.
Yeah, that's strong style. Strong style is, oh shit, Aja Kong's in a match.
Yeah, that is literally Kong at her best and at her meanest is there in All Japan Women, which
one
is
one of the best women's wrestlers ever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, or wrestlers ever. Mm-hmm. You know, I think she's much better than Seth Dum-Dum Rollins, Starscream Rollins. Okay.
Back to my point. There we go.
But here's the important part of the point. I finally figured it out.
Okay.
When Charlotte and Sasha came in a year ago, what did they say? They were having women's matches against those two frickin' scat whores, the Bellas, right?
Oh, my.
Allegedly. Allegedly.
Oh, my.
I'm sorry. I got upset.
Okay. So anyway.
Tony Atlas told that you can. So they're like, well, those matches are a little weak. You know what it is? Charlotte and Sasha, they always wrestle each other, so their matches are really down, and Bailey always wrestles Sasha, so they have really good matches together. But, you know, the fact of the matter is that, you know, they always practice their match with each other. So, you know, they have the match really down, so it's really already pretty much there. And I thought, God, they're right. You know, Charlotte and Sasha don't have matches with other people besides the four of them, the four horsewomen. So that's why these matches come off so good. And I bought that as a good reason why Sasha and Charlotte were a little overrated once they got to the main roster.
Mm-hmm.
Well, wait a second. Ric Flair and fucking Steamboat fought 5,000 times. Nobody right. said anything. They go, oh, it's a 5-star match. Please do it again in 1989.
But my question is, who is saying it? Quote unquote, internet smarks or Dave Meltzer? Because
who don't know it. No. Meltzer always gives respect for. That's how I know about women's wrestling.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like it's the people that don't listen to, you know, the Dave Meltzers in the world. And I'm not saying, hey, look, you know, that's fine because, you know, I listen to Meltzer's podcast. You listen to it. I listen to Brian Johnson or Brian Johnson. So
he can't even talk anymore.
I can't even listen.
Poor guy.
That's just funny. But anyway, I listen to Mike Johnson, you know, and I listen to Wade Keller. I listen to everybody. So
But Dave flew to Japan and hung out with them.
Right.
In 1992.
And I'm not saying this to sound like, oh, well, just because we listen to a lot of stupid podcasts that we're the freaking elite, that we're, you know, that we're freaking
I'm saying that about myself. I'm saying I know more.
we do educate ourselves.
I've watched hundreds of Manami Toyota matches because Meltzer, who's just a journalist, you know, that's why he's better than anybody. He said these matches are all 5-star. How does this bitch have more 5-star matches than Ric Flair? That doesn't make sense. Let me watch this heifer wrestle. Oh shit! So that's what a 5-star match looks like. You see what I'm saying? It's got nothing to do with the male female bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting the shit twisted. 4.5 stars for Bailey Asuka.
Yeah. I like that, you know. And then the main event, which was great. And by the way, more grandiose spectacle in NXT TakeOver to Brooklyn versus SummerSlam. Glorious Bobby Roode's entrance was amazing.
Oh, my God.
The best entrance of all time.
Put the belt on him now, I say, as he's lowered. Just put the world title on him now.
Wade Keller tweeted during that night, and I caught it. He said, who's got the best entrance of all of wrestling? You know, I think Bobby Roode is up there. And I said, well, look, let's look. My favorite wrestling entrance of all time is going to be the Undertaker, always, everywhere, forever, Undertaker. Unless, and does Bobby Roode come close? Maybe in the top five. But let me tell you, between Undertaker's entrance, which was incredible, you had Steve Austin, for me, is just a great entrance altogether.
Pavlovian effect with that glass.
Ah! Yeah, that glass is just like, oh my God. I mean, yeah, absolutely. It's because it's just iconic. Same with The Rock. you look at The Rock and it's like, well, you know, I mean, there's a thing. Shawn Michaels, I think, is probably my second most favorite entrance of all time.
Okay.
Because he comes in, he's got the fireworks, the pyro, that's just what it is. And then Bobby Roode, yeah, he's in the top five.
Wow. You know? Hey, listen, the match didn't blow me away. What happened to La Sombra? What happened to Cien Almas? I'm about to drop him off at the junkyard.
I think he just needs to go undergo some retooling. I don't think that it's not his fault.
Guess what I found out?
What did you find out?
He had another contract option. He was offered a spot.
Yes.
In Los Ingobernables. Spot's not ahead. He'd be in Los Ingobernables right now with Bushi, the greatest wrestler in the free world of the whole world as of today, Tetsuya Naito. And he would be in Los Ingobernables winning matches, having 4- and 5-star matches. But he turned it down so he could go wear some fucking suspenders and some shit hat.
Mm.
And I'm very disappointed. That being said, I feel like their finisher, Bobby Roode, did that stupid, what is that shit? The
Glorious Bomb?
The Glorious Bomb. He's already changed it. He's already changed the finisher. So we don't have to worry. Yes. They had tapings, which I'm going to now spoil every single match. No. They already had another set of tapings, and he was the main event. But for real, Glorious, and I will be there. He's right. Singing it all week. Couldn't stop.
By the way, number one on iTunes over SummerSlam weekend. Can you believe it?
Number one over any Beatles song. Better than any Beatles song. Smell the money. No, I'm free. We're watching it. He's coming down the fucking, whatever is he on? Hydraulic lift? What was that thing?
Yeah, he was on Bad News Barrett's old lift.
That looked expensive. And he's coming down and he turns around and he makes his face. My wife, you know, with the tracking, the thing with the NXT, you know, it's like she's like rewinded. I'm like, I can't. We'll watch it again later. It might fuck up. It might track or whatever. And we watched it again. And sure enough, he turns around with this. I can't even describe it.
Yeah, it's really good. I
can't even describe it. And he's coming down, and I'm prescient. I'm a soothsayer of wrestling because I feel things when I see them. And I say, put the title on him now.
Yeah.
Just put it on him. The match with 2 stars, who cares?
Well, Nakamura came out also.
The best entrance I've ever seen. The best entrance I've ever seen was that. I'm serious.
Didn't you love the fact that when he first came out and started playing the violin, people started booing because they didn't realize it was Nakamura's guy?
And then they go, oh, stop. That's Nakamura's violin player.
It's like, dude,
shut up.
Do you not know who else has the damn violins and cellos in their intro music?
In fairness to Brooklyn, they go, wait.
And then WWE has the greatest wherewithal to release the backstage of what's going on. And there he is waiting in the gorilla position. Shinsuke Nakamura conducting the orchestra, doing all the little flutters and all the little things, and he's back there enjoying the music, just having a great time, and I'm getting chills thinking about it.
It's the greatest wrestler in the world.
The best. And awesome match. Once again, I think when it comes to the takeaway from TakeOver is the fact that it was a natural incline, a build to a great crescendo where every match built upon one another, storytelling much like a great album would.
Right.
To the crescendo, the tag team match was amazing. You had a great women's match, and then you had a great title match. And no matter what the rating is at the end of the day, that's the natural progression of how the pay-per-view and how a lot of classic pay-per-views that we go back to and know and love have been structured.
Yes.
Right. Then so your final thoughts on NXT TakeOver? I think to me, one of the most satisfying, and by the way, Bayley, what a great exit. What a great exit. Just so emotional. Asuka raising her hand at the end, just really good. Just really good. I just had to say that too. That was a very good, classy storytelling move.
Wrestling fans will never forget the NXT run that Bayley had. All positive energy, all great matches. All big pops, all good, all great. She put over Nia Jax. She put over Bayley twice. She put people over. She had 4.5 and 4.75-star matches.
Yes,
all of it. You couldn't ask for a better thing. She comes out on. she's going to be a success. You know, I saw it with my own eyes. Okay, yeah. let me say this about the introduction, the Nakamura. What is the gentleman's name that plays the violin?
Oh, I forgot his name. I'm sorry.
This gentleman is an African-American, okay, playing a violin. And I think that was very symbolic of the whole thing because our culture right now is very divided racially. And I think that's why you saw that trepidation of the crowd booing, oh, look at that guy with the violin. And then like, shh, 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 shh. That's Nakamura's violin player. But it's so symbolic too. There's never been an Asian, Japanese, whatever you want to say, babyface world champion. And then when he came out in the foreground, he's in the foreground playing the violin and Nakamura's in the back doing this artsy dance to it. It was like Jane's Addiction combined with
Yo-Yo Ma.
New Japan wrestling. It was honestly the greatest moment. Terry said, this is the greatest pay-per-view I've ever seen at that moment because she really felt it. And yeah. So here's the African-American violin player, the first Asian champion, dancing together, performing together in one beautiful spectacle. The women having a 4.5-star match. That's why this was so transcendent for me. This is a personal opinion. He is such an artistic person, Nakamura. They're all artists on that moment. Bailey's an artist. Asuka's an artist. Bobby Roode's introduction was artistic. Mm-hmm. Even La Sombra failing and trying is an artist. This was such a great pay-per-view.
Yeah.
And they booked the match, you know, pretty, I thought, good. Like, Samoa Joe beats the shit out of him pretty stiffly, and Nakamura pulls out the win because he's clever and he's new champion, but it sets up rematches. But look, guys, you can't have a 5-star match every time. You have to tell the story for the storyline to progress.
Building the trilogy that we talked about. You have all these things. If you blow your load on the first match, where do you go from there? You have to, you know, it's the old adage, you know, if you're in sales, you know, you don't want to blow everything the first time. You have to be able to figure everything out. But having said that, that was violinist Lee England Jr. who accompanied Shinsuke Nakamura.
And let me tell you something, because I'm a musician that can play some pretty shredding riffs on the guitar. That motherfucker was playing some shredding ass violin.
He was like Paganini level.
Like, damn, this solo's off the chain, man. He was, you know, really, it's good. Like Nakamura's like, can we start my match with a violin solo? Yes, of course we can.
Yes, kids, look at Paganini. You'll get it. It's good.
24 Caprices.
So we have NXT Takeover Brooklyn. Awesome. Now, on the other end of the spectrum, we had 17 million hours worth of SummerSlam. I don't understand why the WWE has a 2-hour-long opening show, pre-show. They have a 4.5-5-hour pay-per-view. I don't even know. It's all screwed up. It's all completely screwed up. And can you imagine the people and the children, the families that are there? And yes, do you get a lot of value for your dollar? Yes, but it's kind of like when you go to a buffet,
okay,
and you eat till you're full, and then you're like, but they keep on bringing you more and more food that you can't eat. It's like, what?
And then early in the buffet, they give you a Young Bucks match.
And so there's a super kick party and everybody has vanilla ice cream and chocolate bars and everybody's like, okay, I'm done. And then there's more.
It's like, well, here's some rice with chicken. It's like, okay. I eat that now, or, you know,
it was so damn long, Stephen. Like I tweeted during that. I said, when is this ever going to end, WWE? I like actually said at WWE, I said, when is this going to end? You guys are killing me.
At 10:30 Central Time, after it had been over a half an hour or so, I tweeted, just a few more matches. Because it felt like, but look, I started watching it right when Sasha and Charlotte started. So I missed, 2 hours of crap? You know, and it still was long.
Yeah, it still was long. I think, and people are like, oh, well, they should have paced it like this. They should have paced it like that. Well, look. When you are making or the John Cena match should have been placed somewhere different. Well, once again,
you think?
Let's look. The John Cena match was the trilogy of matches between him and Styles. To me, great. Now, other analysts and people, a lot of analysts say that that was a great match and it was deserving of this. And yes, it was a spot fest. You and I both agreed it's a spot fest. And I believe also that there were way too many false finishes in it. But at the end of the day, this was going to be the John Cena blow-off match, and he wasn't going to – we understand that he's not going to be on TV because he's shooting his American Grit reality show again, right?
Guys, he's going to Hollywood and TV now. He's going the way of the Rock. He's leaving slowly.
Mm. Okay? And that's why he left his headband in the ring.
And that's what everyone remembers about the spot fest, the headband part, okay? Mm-hmm. Isn't that the obvious clue to the whole thing? You do 20 minutes of near falls? Guys, I like the match. You know, and here's where I disagree with Meltzer. He gave it 4.5 stars.
He did.
I know Meltzer loves the Young Bucks. I know the Young Bucks put pictures of him on their tights, which is strange.
The father picture, which is great.
You think I got a problem? Go look at these assholes.
I think, by the way, for the record, I think it's hilarious that our wrestling board has adopted your vernacular for Dave Meltzer.
but that's what he is. He's the father of everything we're reading on the internet because of Wrestling Inc. I listen to the dumb thing. They go, Sasha's radio show, 7 a.m. Monday morning. Well, you know, Sasha had to do the match, and she's going to have her back looked at. 8:55, WrestlingInc.com. Breaking news, Sasha Banks has a back problem. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, he's the father of everything that leaks outward. And that's all I ever meant. But they blow him kisses, you know. I guess if I saw him, I would do that.
Yeah, probably.
If I saw him in the parking lot, I would do that. Would that be weird? What was I talking about?
So we were talking about the John Cena headband.
Oh, Christ Jesus. Yeah, so, see, I asked the Lord for patience with myself. So I think it's spot matches are awesome and fun. But, you know, again, psychology, I like strong style psychological stuff. That's why I love NWA and I love Roddy Garvin. You know, nobody talks about him anymore. Or Steve Regal's stuff when he was at Nitro, okay? Or current New Japan product, which is a combination of strong, stiff stuff with psychology. And this match just didn't do it for me like that. This is not – and then what – well, but here's really the point. Now, obviously, this match is fun to watch. I think it was a little overrated. But my point is that once you do that, you got 4 more hours or 3 hours of what? What are you going to do now?
Yes.
Only Bobby Roode could have saved it, honestly, or a Nakamura intro, you know what I mean, to put it – so if you wanted to do this shit, you needed to do a third from last – do a dead match and then do the main event and put Lesnar Orton, I guess, was going to be it. That placement of that match screwed up the whole card, actually.
Well, I think Brian Fritz had mentioned in Between the Ropes podcast that, you know, having a match in between instead of just airing the video packages that WWE used to do a lot, I think the video package would have been effective because that's just the appropriate amount of breathing time to get reacquainted and then have another kick-ass match. I think at this point, having a match just for the sake of breathing time, I don't think is good, because then you have what we see here. You have a match, you know, you have a vignette, video package, you have a match in between these big matches, and it's 45 minutes for the crowd to just completely die off.
Yeah, and know? I mean, there was just, they were dead forever. Mm-hmm. They went to sleep.
The other thing I wanted to mention to you is that, yes, there were some great matches, no doubt, but overshadowed by the overall length and the endurance of the crowd. The crowd was starting to lose it. Let's talk about the women's match really quick, and then we'll move on to Brock Lesnar. So the women's match, once again, I think was actually on their way to being a good match. And then you have the fact that, you know, Sasha Banks, as beat up as she has been reported as being, tried to go out in a ball of glory, a fireball.
A blaze of glory.
And what happens is she nearly takes herself out, takes out Charlotte with a couple botchy moves. And God bless her, you know, girl, don't break your neck. Don't be Daniel Bryan. Can we please not see Sasha Banks kill herself on pay-per-view?
She might, you know, that's why she's my favorite, because she's willing. Look, I don't like wrestling as much as I like violence, you know, and Sasha brings the violence. Sometimes the violence is to herself. Is that to her detriment? Will her career be shortened like Daniel Bryan? Absolutely. But unfortunately, because of the Japanese-ness of my wrestling brain, when I see that, I go, great job. Great job. That was very violent.
You're propagating this behavior, Steven.
I am propagating this behavior, and I like it.
Oh no. It really is disturbing, Steven. This, you know, you and I see eye to eye in a lot of things, but man, I just want the girls to I want the wrestlers to continue to wrestle. Does it mean I'm a fan of The Miz and his I don't want to catch you style?
Hold on.
No.
Hold on. Hold on. Is this Aja Kong's house? Should they be more violent? Okay. Aja Kong, I just called her, says they should be violent.
I think you can be violent without killing yourself.
Hold on.
Genichi on the phone.
No, she said no. look.
Say Genichi on the phone.
I don't have his phone.
Oh, no, you're just on the first day basis.
You don't want to call his house at the wrong time. You know, here's the difference.
Okay.
So it's like, okay, you're being hypocritical about Rollins. Rollins makes those decisions for that wrestler. Sasha Banks makes that decision for herself.
I see.
Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? That's her decision. You know, yeah, Dean Ambrose decided to get cut up, and then that was his decision.
Right. Well, I still think it was a very valiant effort by both. But yes, it is disconcerting for me because I don't want to see anyone, you know, she takes these Lita-style bumps where she just bends her neck over, and I'm like, oh my God, woman.
But you know, Lita was inefficient in her bumping, where Sasha is deliberately taking the bump with that in mind.
Yeah.
Anyway. She'll be fine.
Yeah, I know she'll be fine at the end of the day, but I don't want her to kill herself as a result of trying to please a crowd, because at the end of the day, I'd much rather she took less liberties in the highly rated matches we saw her in NXT than she is now.
What about that that backward sweet poison Frankensteiner was very scary, and she landed on her head in that, and they kept showing the clip over and over again.
I can't believe that.
That move was awesome.
Well, that move was awesome, but man, I just can't believe it.
Hold on. Naito, can you stop doing the sweet poison Frankensteiner? Oh, really? Okay, he hung up.
And last but not least, on the SummerSlam card, we have here the Beast. Yes. Suplex City meets the Viper in Viperville, and everybody was crazy. Now, once again, WWE trying to do something different, taken from the pages of the UFC with a TKO knockout. Blood was drawn, apparently, the hard way, and I thought it was a blade job at first, just because it looked that way, but apparently, you know, Brock Lesnar knows how to take care of people. I think he knows how to take care of people. Brock Lesnar, even though he's brutal with the suplexes, he knew exactly where to hit him, and I'm sure they talked about it, and Vince had this finish for months and months, you know, leading up to it.
They told Orton at 3:00.
Oh, they did?
Yes.
Well, I think he probably had the finish in his mind, you know.
Oh, he did.
Months ahead of time.
And they didn't tell anybody. You know, they told Hayes and this and that like they do. Mm-hmm. So that's why your boy got upset, your boy Chris Jericho. Now, there's a motherfucker that likes some violence.
Yeah. Oh, Chris Jericho. Okay, yeah. So let's talk about the match, and we'll talk about Chris Jericho, and we'll have a couple loose ends we can tie up. So
the second match, right?
so we have the main event. I thought the match was still very brutal. If you're looking at the match standing alone outside of the conversation of the pay-per-view just by itself, I thought it was pretty good. Brock Lesnar really is resorting to his very limited moveset. We talked about how limited movesets are used by performers that are very over. And do you think – I think maybe he could expand his moveset to more than three moves, but, you know, that's just me.
But, I don't think you'll get him to change.
I don't think you will, and I don't think Chris Jericho will either. But then he gets down, and he gets really down and dirty. Orton does, I think, a very valiant job. He never gave up, but there was a TKO. I don't think that was a very satisfying finish for WWE fans. At the end of the day, Brock Lesnar still wins by technical knockout and a pool of blood streaming.
Awesome.
Like Steve Austin. What are your thoughts on the event? Because I thought it was pretty good.
Well, as I just said, I love violence and I love the match. There was blood. There was
hard way blood.
They don't use blades anymore. You could have bladed and had that happen, but now blades are so awful to use.
Yeah,
and
I don't think they allow it.
Now you got Brock Lesnar elbowing you in the face instead. I guess they were trying to give Harley Race a boner. That's all I can figure. You hard way somebody in the head with your elbow until there's a pool of blood on the ground. How's that for a finish, Randy? Yeah. You know, I thought it was a really fun match. I know that the WWE marks didn't like it, a lot of them. They like the main event style. But I don't share their opinions on what's good about wrestling. I think I've been making that point the last 30 minutes straight with all of my Japan versus Women's Japan versus America, all this talk. But I loved it. I thought it was great. I thought it was a great angle. It was obviously a successful, realistic angle, just like we were talking about with Miz and all that earlier, because Chris Jericho wasn't sure. Mm-hmm. It's still real to him, damn it.
Yeah, so I really enjoyed the main event as well, and I'm a big fan of UFC anyway. I was a very early adopter of UFC.
Me too. Dan Severn, baby.
Back in the 90s, man. You know, so that was me back in the 90s when I was auditioning for Real World. So, to circle loop back around to that. So that's a little piece of trivia for you. But the thing about that is that, you know, I think they really need to figure out WWE and be consistent. Are they going to move toward this more realistic style and calling matches with that, those particular things? Let's see that we can do real. Let's see if we can do that. And I like the trend. And let's see what happens from here on out, because now Brock is going to be gone. I think they're going to be setting up for that Shane McMahon Brock Lesnar match down the road, where a surrogate could be a Goldberg. I think that's where a lot of people were pissed off that Goldberg was able to do the 2K17 launch party and make a lot of comments regarding the WWE and for him coming back, and yet they didn't see him after those expectations and that hitting the press. I think that's where a lot of people were let down, Stephen.
Meltzer actually brought that up, that it could possibly happen. I was shocked he said it, and then it didn't happen. And I think that let a lot of people down. That news spread like wildfire. You know, I still, you know, trepidation to believe that, because, you know, Goldberg doesn't want to get hurt in that ring, because that's what's going to happen with Lesnar. You know, Lesnar is very unlike any human in the world.
Yeah, he's super.
Even the Nevada commission's kind of like, oh, maybe we won't get too weird on your suspension thing. You know, I mean, he just does what he wants, and it makes people angry. I get why Jericho gets angry. Why does he not have to take a piss test? Why does he get to take steroids and the Nevada commission doesn't come out hard on him? Why does he get to beat, Randy Orton up with a real elbow? Well, you know what? He is allowed to do that. He has superseded his employer and employers.
He's bigger than the business.
To do that.
Yeah, he's bigger than the business that he's involved in, or the businesses that he's involved in.
That's how good he is.
He's that good. But he is a main drawing power. So backstage, what happens is that Chris Jericho gets involved and is asking Michael Hayes and Gorilla what's going on. And Michael Hayes decides to pull a rib on him. This is my understanding. Pulls a rib on him and doesn't tell him that this match ending was actually worked out between the two of them in advance.
I think that's what I understand. I think Hayes didn't want to tell him the ending because that ending was very well guarded and he knew it. Mm-hmm. So, but he's like, leave me alone. I think that's what happened.
So Chris Jericho gets his panties in a wad and then all of a sudden confronts Brock Lesnar when he gets back into Gorilla. And
always a good idea.
Yeah, which is always great. And he say, hey, man, what are you doing out there? And then Brock Lesnar says, are you going to punch me or are you going to kiss me?
Something I think Lesnar, I had heard in one report that Lesnar had actually kissed him and told him to kiss him back, which is totally hot.
So I think Brock Lesnar was Chris Jericho wasn't smartened up. You know, which he should be. He should, you know, I think he just got hot because he wanted to protect his friend Randy Orton.
Absolutely.
You know, and but the balls on Chris Jericho, man.
That's ballsy.
Wow. So, my boy, Chris Jericho got some balls.
Right. So Jericho Lesnar, we can do that now.
How about that? Well, we have so much yet we have left to talk about, and I've been promising talking about the suspensions and talking about Ring of Honor and all this, but we're running out of time on the show. Just too much stuff to get through. Our Immortal promo of the week will be Bayley and her debut on Monday Night Raw with Commissioner Mick Foley. So we're going to have that.
I thought it was the Galvatron promo on Starscream when he kills him.
No, we can insert that too if you'd like, if that would make you feel better.
We can include most of the coronation.
Yeah, we can include some of that. So that'll be the bonus promo of the week from the Transformer Federation of the Universal Matrix of Leadership. So
remember, folks, even if it was just for a mere day or two, Starscream was technically the leader of the Decepticons for a period of time.
Probably the shortest reign in history. And by the way, the Matrix of Decepticon leadership, much better looking, and the crown much better looking than the Universal Championship. I'll just leave it to you like that.
You got that right. There is no Decepticon Matrix. It's a trick.
I know it's an Autobot thing. I get that. But you know,
it's a Quintesson trick, Aljon. Everyone knows that.
Okay. Hey, by the way, yes. The Matrix of leadership, still a better looking belt than the Universal Championship.
Yeah. The only good thing about the Matrix is that Lion song plays once you open it.
That's true. Maybe that should open up.
Wait, that's not Lion. Lion's who did the theme song. I forget who did. Yeah, but
we're going to start the show with the touch. Yeah. Okay.
Matrix leadership.
We'll add that later. Hey, where can people follow you, Stephen?
They can follow me out the door as I go to work. No, they could follow me, Dr. Deathmark, because I will, Senior Lariato and Death to All Marks were taken off of Twitter. That's fucking bullshit.
It is.
But Lariato is back on sharing Aja Kong clips, GIFs, and that makes me so pleased. And that's basically all you can really see on my Twitter.
Yeah, well, that's good. And you can follow me at Aljon Rocks, also P Wrestling Cast on Twitter, Pro Wrestling Cast on Facebook, ProWrestlingCast.com for all of our shopping links. We have a very long, we try to truncate the show. So there you have it.
Truncate.
Don't forget to tuck your head, Los Ingobernables for life, along with Nick Bockwinkle. And we'll see you next week. Adios. Enjoy the promo of the week.
You blew it, LaSombra.
Promo of the week.
After my performance last night, don't you think I deserve the night off? Because there's no one left that's worthy of my time to face.
Not so bad, Charlotte. See, there are aspects of this job that are truly heartbreaking, like asking Finn Balor to relinquish his Universal Championship was one of the most difficult things I'd ever had to do. But there are actually aspects of this job that bring me utter joy. Because Stephanie McMahon and I have signed the hottest free agent of the new era. May I present to you the newest member of the Monday Night Raw Women's Division.
Silenced New York City last night, but Bayley just woke it back up.
All right, what are those things called?
Wacky Wavy Inflatable Tube Man.
Spoken like a true used car dealer, Saxton.
You know, Charlotte and Dana first talked about deserving it. Well, that's a young lady who deserves it. Deserves an opportunity.
Oh, Charlotte knows Bayley very, very well. Brought up together in NXT.
For this moment my entire life. So Mick, thank you so much for this opportunity. What do you say we seal the deal with a hug?
A hug? A hug? You mean a hug right here?
A hug right here in Brooklyn, New York.
Stole a pop.
Thanks for checking out Pro Wrestling Cast. If you've got a question or comment, leave us a voicemail at 615-9339-PWC. That's 615-9339-792. Follow us on Facebook at Pro Wrestling Cast and on Twitter at PWrestlingCast. Or email us at ProWrestlingCast@gmail.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Opinions and ideas presented in these podcasts are those of Pro Wrestling Cast. Now for entertainment purposes.
You're awesome. Thank you so much, Mr. Funk, for saying what needed to be said.